Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have wrecked! They've got into each other!
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello, how are you? I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Hutton.
We are the two soft compounds. Finally, the 2020 season underway then. And it was an absolute belter of a race, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, we waited, 100 days for Formula One to come back. We get to Austria. We thought the teams might be rusty. Well, the drivers we thought might be rusty. They didn't appear to be so, but the teams certainly were.
Yeah, the cars as well. I mean, it just seemed to be everything that went wrong in the race was kind of car related for everyone, wasn't it? I saw some interesting stuff in the qualifying and the practice sessions. I was watching some of the Channel 4 coverage over the weekend on that. And there were some interesting parts where, did you see when Latifi had his crash?
Yeah.
And this was interesting because I hadn't noticed this. And then Mark Webber pointed it out. And he was basically saying to Latifi, he said, in his Aussie accent, he said, "Hey, mate, if you're watching this, a little bit of advice for you." Because apparently Latifi, as he crashed, he took his hands off the steering wheel, which he meant to do.
Yeah.
But he sort of arced his hands outwards. And Webber said his fingers were outside the cockpit. And he says one of the worst things you can do in a crash like that. And it was just interesting to see that someone with the experience of Mark Webber's picked up on that. I hadn't even noticed till he said it. But it was, yeah, just interesting bit of insight from an ex-driver that you wouldn't normally get. But I thought all of it, the whole weekend, you know, the qualifying, the practice, that's what I was trying to say, and the race itself, just all brilliant, wasn't it? It was exactly what we were looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I think they should make it a rule that every season should start at a track with lots of overtaking opportunities and a track like the Red Bull Ring that can really wreck cars. And that's what we saw from the reliability over the weekend, was that those high curbs were literally shaking the cars apart.
Mm. Yeah, and I think the interesting thing, the fact that we're going back here for another race now, some damage was obviously done to a lot of the cars. Is that going to affect these cars for race number two? You know, are they going to be looking, going, oh, you know, Mercedes, they reckon they had some gearbox issue that was caused by the track and by the bumps. You know, are they going to be nervous thinking, have we sorted that out? Is it going to happen again? You know, are they going to be really nervous going into this race? It's going to be fascinating, isn't it, having two races back to back at the same circuit?
Yeah, I mean, going into the weekend, when we saw qualifying and then got the idea of the true pace of all the cars, there were some things that we expected, like we expected Racing Point to be pretty good and the McLarens to be pretty good. The real worry for me was that Mercedes were clearly a half a second faster than anything else on track. And I thought, oh no, we're going to have a season this year which is complete domination and not much else is going to happen. But then, of course, I was proved wrong with the results of the first race. The one thing that I think stands out like a mile is the poor performance of Ferrari. I mean, this is just, you know, this is not good. And as it was pointed out on the Sky coverage very cleverly, since the FIA investigated their engines last year, they haven't had a single pole position since then. So I think the FIA got pretty close to uncovering some wrongdoings. They've turned the engines down and all of the Ferrari-powered cars had a bit of a woeful opening race.
Yeah, and you mentioned it there, the Alfa Romeos, you know, the Haas, anything with Ferrari power is really, really struggling. You know, the Haas and the Alfa Romeo are right down the bottom. Even the Williams was looking slightly better than those cars. And, you know, that's got to be a worry because maybe the Ferrari is actually a good car, but the engine is just not right. And like you say, they've obviously changed something on the engine, they've turned something down, and it's just not got the performance they were having. And, you know, a team the size of Ferrari with the amount of drivers, the amount of staff they've got, the amount of engineers, the amount of creative minds they've got within Ferrari, you know, you just can't get your head around how they can struggle that much, you know, in this era of Formula One. And with this break, you know, they've had time to sit and think, and a lot of the engineers will have had time to kind of creatively think around ideas, maybe come up with new ideas. So for them to be still struggling like they are, it's just incredible, really, you know, a team of that size.
Yeah, and it's clear it's not just the engine either. It's clear they've got some aerodynamic issues. They said they were basically rebuilding the whole car and bringing a completely new package for the Hungarian Grand Prix in a couple of weeks' time. But now, after the result this weekend, they've speeded that up, and they reckon they're going to have most of the new parts on the car for Austria Part 2, which will be interesting. The other teams have been upgrading as well. Pity that Red Bull had a double DNF. I think for the first time since 2014, they failed to score any points and especially at this circuit, which we know suits them. Alex Albon, just so unlucky again in the closing stages with the tap from Hamilton, just like Brazil in the back end of 2019. Because looking at his pace at that part of the race, he'd got the new fresh soft tyres on. He could have won the entire thing on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Martin Brundle said in the commentary, you know, Albon, you need to be more patient and all that kind of stuff. But I think watching it back, this was much more Hamilton's fault than the last time. I think when they had their coming together, it was Brazil, wasn't it, the last one?
Yeah.
I think when they had their coming together, it was very 50-50 and a little bit kind of, you know, maybe that was impatience on Albon's behalf. But this one, you know, for me, Albon was passed, and I think that was a little bit naughty from Hamilton. He wouldn't have done it on purpose because he never does. But yeah, real shame, you know, like you say, Max and everything, they looked really racy this weekend. I thought Max had a really good, you know, he had the harder tyre, didn't he? He was on the mediums, I think, when he started the race. There was a lot of things in favour of that team at the start of this race. And I think they were very, very unlucky. I'm looking forward to seeing if they can sort all that stuff out, how they can do in the next race. Because I could quite easily see a Red Bull 1-2 in the next race if they can get those things sorted out.
Yeah, if they get their act together, without a doubt. And I think, you know, the Mercedes is going to be strong for the whole season no matter what, but it's what the other teams are doing. And I think if you look behind Mercedes now, you've got four or five cars that are all capable of beating each other, if not Mercedes. And that's what's going to make it so exciting this year. You know, the McLarens look strong. Racing Point looks stronger in qualifying than they do necessarily during the race. Certainly in the early part of the race on Sunday, they looked as though they were struggling for pace. But they're definitely still up there. And with the, you know, the tweaks and the little upgrades they're going to bring at future events, then it could be just one of the best seasons ever. And of course, looking forward to next year. The rule change has been delayed now till 2022. So effectively, we go into next season, because we don't really know how long this season's going to be yet. We go into next year with virtually the same cars that they can just continue to tweak and develop. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and we've guaranteed, I think it's 8 races they've guaranteed for this year, which is the minimum you need for a championship. So it's you know, a lot of people have said this already, Max having his DNF and the same with Albon, you know, that's a bad start to not even finish a race when you've only got potentially 8 races. It's not good for those teams. Interesting that Hamilton didn't win the race, you know, and there's a lot of kind of mental game coming into this. I think I saw some comments this week as well from Rosberg, who said that Vettel, in his opinion, is not driving like a 4-time world champion, and he doesn't warrant being a 4-time world champion. It looks like Vettel's confidence is right, you know, as low as it can get at the moment. There were some interesting remarks. I think it was from Vettel himself that said that it was an interesting release, press release from Ferrari, when they said it was a mutual decision, because that press release was the first he'd heard of it, is what he's saying.
Yeah,
I find that crazy.
I felt really sorry for him. I think they've treated him appallingly, if that is indeed what happened. You know, they basically sent him an email or made a phone call and said, listen, we won't be requiring your services next year. It's before they'd even sat round to start any form of negotiation. So when it was released, we thought, oh, well, they've reached it by mutual consent. Vettel's not happy with a team and the direction it's taking. Maybe he wants a break. He's got a young family. Maybe he just wants to retire full stop. But no, it looks as though it was all forced upon him by the bigwigs at Ferrari, which is very strange and unusual. I feel very sorry for Seb. I think, you know, he has to have the respect of a 4-time world champion. It doesn't matter how good the Red Bull car he was in that won him those races. He was still competing against 19 other guys. And, you know, you've got to be at the top of your game to win a world championship. So he's done that. And then he's gone to Ferrari and let's face it, he's bagged some decent points in the Ferrari car, which wasn't always the strongest. And now he's been treated as though he's just been brushed under the carpet.
Yeah, and if that is true, you know, that they've not renewed his contracts and they've just kind of rung him up and told him either via phone or via email, you know, that doesn't give him any chance to speak to any other teams, to talk to his agent and work out if there's anywhere else he can go. You know, are McLaren interested? Are Renault interested? You know, that gives him no time at all. Really harsh on him, I think. He's not had the best few seasons at Ferrari, but that said, like you just said, he's a 4-time world champion. He's a great driver. You know, you don't win 4 championships by accident. You know, maybe one, you could say, well, you know, he was in the best car and he had a lucky year, but not 4 world titles. So I do feel really sorry for him. It's been a strange few years, I guess, for him. But I'm looking at the moment, I just don't see where he goes.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a big rumour going around that Daniel Ricciardo may be replaced at Renault before the end of the season by a returning Fernando Alonso. And another massive rumour I saw yesterday was that the Renault factory have been told to stand by for an announcement which will happen tomorrow, being Wednesday, when they will be told about their new driver for 2021. And apparently Cyril at Renault has said to guys who've been at the factory longer than 15 years, you have worked with this guy before. So it all looks as though Alonso's heading that way. I'm not sure contractually whether they can remove Ricciardo early from his contract. But, you know, the rumour mill is massive as always. We're only into the first race of the season.
The Alonso thing, I can't, you know, he's great. We've mentioned this before on the podcast. He's great in everything he gets in. You know, he'll get in any car, in any kind of different discipline. He'll go into rallying or anything like that, and he'll do really well, and he'll jump in 24-hour Le Mans and all that kind of stuff. And he'll always win. He'll always do really well. I don't know. He's pushing 40 now, isn't he? And to come back to Formula One, is he really going to get anywhere with Renault at the moment? You know, I feel like Renault are now where McLaren was when he joined them. So is he just going to have another frustrating couple of years and still not get another world title and then go out, you know, just not, it's not, it doesn't sound like a great end to an amazing career to me.
Yeah, it's, you know, you look at Schumacher's return and we all had high hopes for that. And even though he was in a car that was eventually going to become the fastest on the grid, it certainly wasn't at the time. And he struggled, you know, he struggled when he was teammates with Rosberg to match his pace in qualifying and in the race. And I think that's the last thing that Alonso wants, is to come in and look like a bit of a bum alongside someone like Esteban Ocon in that Renault. And the Renault team, they just baffle me. I don't know whether it's, is it badly run? I get the impression that Cyril's not a great man manager, but that's only from the things I see on TV. Obviously, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes. I just get the impression they're not really a team that's at one. If you look at Mercedes, they always talk about family. They talk about, you know, one team for one cause, all that sort of stuff. You just don't see that with the Renault team.
Yeah, and again, with McLaren, I think it's very similar. You saw, you know, Zach and Lando hugging at the end of the race. And I think if you've got a boss that's that passionate, Zach Brown is very, you know, he gets excited about the race and he gets excited about a podium or, you know, being second on the grid for the start of the race. When you've got a boss like that, and Toto's the same and Christian is the same, Christian Horner's the same to an extent as well, where you see that excitement about the racing, they get excited, they get passionate, but also they've got a great relationship with the drivers. And you don't see that, for example, with Cyril and Daniel Ricciardo. You know, you don't see them hugging, you don't see them, you know, spending time together at the track. And I think there's a lot of that. I think you've got a lot of teams where the drivers will slot into the team and it will just be a match made in heaven and they'll get on great. You know, Hamilton at Mercedes, Lando at McLaren is a great example of this, you know. And I do think that Ricciardo will be a really good fit at McLaren. I think he'll come in, you know, he'll get on well with Zach Brown. He'll get on well with Lando. Those two will be really mischievous between them. And I think that sort of fit is going to be great for Ricciardo and for his confidence and for his style. You know, and I just think he went to Renault. He went there for a lot of money, a lot of promises, most likely. And it just, for me, it hasn't worked out on either side. You know, I don't think Ricciardo's been himself. He's not been that happy there. And I don't think they've been that happy with him in the team. And the team's not been that comfortable, like you say. And it's a strange fit. And, you know, are they looking at Alonso and going, that's the answer? We bring Alonso in and he takes over and he comes in and he leads the team. And it's something we've been missing since he was here. And a lot of the guys have, you know, worked with Alonso before. We've had a world championship with Alonso. You know, is that what they're thinking? You know, bring back the glory days. But is it rose tinted glasses when actually, like you say, he comes back, he has a woeful couple of years, and then he disappears off again?
Two soft compounds.
Right, we're going to talk about Lando Norris very shortly, but first, let's go and get some stats. As always, very interesting. Here's Nikki from Lights Out with the stats that you need from the first Grand Prix of the season.
Bottas takes the early championship lead, Norris records his first podium finish, and Vettel finishes 10th for the first time. Here are five of the best stats from the 2020 Austrian Grand Prix weekend. And we start with Valtteri Bottas, who for the second year in a row won the first Grand Prix of the season. He's the eighth different driver to have recorded multiple wins at the Austrian Grand Prix, and the Red Bull Ring is the first circuit at which Bottas has taken two wins. The 2020 Austrian Grand Prix was also the first race which Bottas has led from start to finish. The Finn is the first driver to lead the event from start to end since Jacques Lafitte did so at the 1981 Austrian Grand Prix. Lando Norris became the 40th different British driver to finish on the podium in Formula 1, and the 212th different driver to finish in the top three in the sport's history. At 20 years, 7 months and 22 days, Norris became F1's third youngest podium finisher, behind Max Verstappen at the 2016 Spanish Grand Prix and Lance Stroll at the 2017 Azerbaijan Grand Prix. It was also the first time that the driver of car number 4 finished on the podium since Felipe Massa finished in third place at the 2013 Spanish Grand Prix. Between them, Mercedes, Ferrari and McLaren have taken 48% of the podium finishes available in Formula One's 70-year history. Yet the 2020 Austrian Grand Prix marked the very first time that those three teams have finished on the podium together. The last time Mercedes and McLaren shared a podium was at the 2014 Australian Grand Prix, while the last time that Ferrari and McLaren shared a podium was at the 2012 Brazilian Grand Prix. While one Ferrari driver finished on the podium, Sebastian Vettel finished in uncharted territory. For the first time in his 241 race career, Vettel finished in 10th position. Prior to this weekend, 10th, 14th and 20th were the only positions in the top 20 in which Vettel had never finished. Jackie Stewart, Mika Hakkinen, Mike Hawthorn, Nigel Mansell and Niki Lauda are the other world champions to have had a single 10th place finish in their careers. And finally, a weekend that showed so much promise for Red Bull resulted in a rare double retirement, the team's first since the 2018 Azerbaijan Grand Prix. While Max Verstappen became the 59th different driver to record the first retirement of a Formula One season, Alex Albon's retirement ensured that 2020 would be the first time since 2014 that Red Bull had failed to score at the first Grand Prix of the year, as well as the first time in their history that the team has not scored at their home track. Pierre Gasly was the only Honda-powered car to reach the checkered flag.
Yeah, so it looks so Honda, and thanks, Nicky, by the way. He'll be back across this coming race weekend with all of his stats. At Lights Out is the name of his Twitter account, and you can follow his blog, which is just fantastic and very interesting and full of spreadsheets and graphics and everything else. Yeah, interesting that Honda suffered all those problems, just one Honda power car finishing, because certainly last year they were really reliable in terms of the engine. And again, it could be the fact that the A1 ring is just really, really getting rid of cars quickly with those steep curbs.
Yeah, it's an interesting track, isn't it? They've removed some of the curves, I believe. Some of the sausage curbs came away, and they still had, you know, lots and lots of problems with the cars. So you're right, it's an interesting car breaking track. Lots of, you know, teams were saying stay off the curves and, you know, stay on completely off the red and white bits and everything, which a lot of the drivers were struggling with, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it's a real car breaker, and that's what's going to be fascinating this weekend. I think the fact that damage was done to some of those cars. Mm. And they've now got to go again on the same track, so which is something they've never done before. So, you know, that could, and that's why I think I've just got a funny feeling the Red Bulls are going to do very well this weekend.
Yeah, hopefully they will, and hopefully Mercedes won't just run away with it as they could have done at the first race. Let's talk about Lando Norris. Now, before I get into this, I'm a big McLaren fan, and I think Lando is just a great driver and a brilliant personality. And I don't want to appear to be slagging him or the team off in any particular way. But we've got hold of the audio of Lando's last lap. Now, if you remember, Hamilton got the 5-second penalty. So they worked out, as we did viewing, the McLaren team worked out that if they could get Lando under 5 seconds difference between him and Hamilton, he would indeed finish third and get a podium. Going into the final lap, he was 5.7 seconds behind. He needed to get that down to under 5, and we've got audio from Lando's onboard during the last lap, and you can hear his race engineer talking to him. Now, I think this piece of audio is really dramatic. It was not broadcast on the world TV feed during the race. This came afterwards. But have a listen to this, Scott, and let me know what you think. This is starting the last lap, first corner.
Single press overtake here and out of turn three. out of turn 8. Press and hold overtake for 5 seconds. Give it everything. Out of the last corner as well, overtake. Lando, the gap to Hamilton was 4.8. I think that's a podium, mate. I think that's a podium.
Yeah, boy! Yes!
Let's wait for it to be confirmed. But yes, mate, what a drive. What a race.
Now, there we go. So we were all made up that Lando got on the podium, got the third place. And that footage, I think, is quite dramatic because everyone was really hoping that he would do it. He brought the time difference down from 5.7 to 4.8 in the final lap, and he got the fastest lap of the race as well. And I watched that footage along with you, Scott, and we were both like, wow, this is great, this is great. But the thing that occurred to me was, and again, I don't want to take anything away from the achievement, but that is pure driver coaching to me.
Yeah, it was, like you say, a very dramatic lap. And what's interesting about that is you can hear the nerves in the engineer's voice.
Yeah.
At the end of that, Lando said he was out of breath because he'd put so much into that lap. But like you say, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there was a lot of information there that, like you say, is driver coaching. You know, to tell the driver how long to hold onto the overtake button for, to tell the driver which corners to use the overtake button is without a doubt driver coaching. It didn't really occur to me until you mentioned it, you know, when we was watching that clip, and I thought, yeah, no, actually you are right. Now I love McLaren. I'm a massive fan of McLaren, massive fan of Lando, as are you. I personally would be disappointed if anything came of that and it ended up that Hamilton moved up a place personally. But for me, you know, if you let them get away with that, where does that end? You know, because a lot of teams are going to, they'll hear that and they'll see that and they'll go, well, hang on, if they can do that, can we do this? And you go down that road, don't you? Of, you know, they said this and she said that. And, you know, the Red Bull team are still kicking off about the steering wheel, the DAS, DAS, whatever you call it, that Mercedes have got. You know, so these teams are constantly looking out for things like this, aren't they? So it'd be interesting if that gets mentioned. I've seen nothing online since.
No, I mean, I've just seen online, congratulations and isn't it amazing and stuff. And no one's really picked up on the driver coaching thing, which we know in the rules is forbidden. I mean, can you imagine watching qualifying and Hamilton's on a hot lap and you can constantly hear his race engineer saying, overtake button for 3 seconds at turn three, overtake button after turn eight for 5 seconds, hold and press, overtake button on the final corner. We'd all be up in arms and he'd have his lap time deleted. And that's my point on this. Wast, I kind of didn't want to bring it up. I think, you know, I'm really surprised Mercedes haven't protested on this because they could get that third place reinstated, which means more championship points. So, you know, it remains to be seen if it's picked up on in a greater way between now and the forthcoming race weekend. But I don't want to take too much away from Lando because it was a spectacular lap. And, you know, Wast, I think it's driver coaching. The guy is telling him where to press the overtake button and for how long. It's pure driver coaching, but it was very a dramatic conclusion to the race, and good on him for getting on the podium. I really mean that. I don't want to take anything away from him. We're almost out of time, so we're going to look forward to this weekend's second running of the Austrian Grand Prix, which has got a weird name that I can't pronounce, but it's effectively the same race. We're going to see them practicing on Friday, and like you say, interestingly enough, they will have learnt from the mistakes that were made at the opening round and hopefully put those right and probably done things like stiffen suspension at the right places just to try and counteract the curbs and things. So it could be another brilliant race.
Yeah, I mean, Mercedes are mega. They're going to do what they need to do to get those cars in one piece and to be able to race properly. They will be nervous, though, which is what's interesting, I think. I think the Red Bulls are going to get their stuff together and I think they're going to have a much better race weekend. And we haven't really mentioned Leclerc either, who had a fantastic race in the last race, you know, completely outdrove that Ferrari.
Yeah.
And you can never, you know, discount Leclerc because he's just an incredible driver. But for me, I think the Red Bulls are going to do really well. I'm going to say that Hamilton's going to win the race because I think he's going to also have a point to prove. He's going to have the bit between his teeth. And I think he had, you know, some what he will be thinking, unnecessary penalties. So he'll be, you know, ready to go. I think he might win the race, but I think we could have Max second, and I'm going to say Albon even third. And I think the McLarens are going to do very well again this weekend.
Yeah, I think Mercedes are going to be at least have one driver on the podium. I would agree. I think Red Bull are going to have at least one driver on the podium. It would be such a fairy tale to see Lando or Carlos Sainz on the podium as well. And don't discount Racing Point. They look really good towards the end of the race. And, you know, the other teams are going to sort their woes out, hopefully, including Ferrari, who are going to bring major new updates ahead of time to this weekend. So it's going to be fantastic. Join us again next Tuesday on the podcast when we...
So it was a great season opener. I'm really excited about another race this weekend in the same place. We'll look forward to it as well over the weekend. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Make sure you check out our review of the next Austrian Grand Prix.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.